Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. I'm your host, Clayton Fletcher, back in New York City after a brief but fun visit to my home state of Maryland, where I was visiting family for Easter. Got to play a little bit of medium stakes poker in a cash game at Maryland Live Casino, which is a really fun place to visit. It's a very nice, very cozy kind of casino with a really nice poker room. And I mean, from what I've seen every time I've been there, pretty wild action. It seems like that part of the world. Now, this place is located right between Baltimore and Washington. And I guess in that area, there's a lot of money because people like to gamble it up. I mean, I played in a game that when I told my mother about it, made her want to come out of retirement. And wow, when I told her, okay, so I'm playing 5-10, no limit hold'em. And there's a player at my table with, I don't know, maybe about 9 or 10,000 in front of him, who is blind raising out of turn on 100% of the hands. I don't know why he's doing this, but he's putting out $150 from any position on the table. So say he's in fourth position. Now the strategy becomes, if you want to play the pot, you know it's going to be 150 unless somebody is dumb enough to raise, because this guy's already got his money in out of turn. So you limp for 10, the next player limps for 10, and now as long as the action hasn't changed, meaning no one else has raised, that 150 that he's already put in stands regardless. And it's not live. It's not like a sleeper straddle. It's not any kind of straddle. It's just throwing $150 into the pot before you even see your cards. So, after this player left, the other players told me that he comes all the time. He has just so much money and he doesn't really care. So I could have told you that. So anyway, I ended up playing with this gentleman for 5 or 6 hours. And I put together a really nice win. It was a good trip. Anyway, the strategy against a player like this, obviously, is you don't want to raise. If you have a hand that you would normally use as a raise, you want to just limp in, let his raise stand. If anybody else wants to call or try to ISO raise him, and you have a hand worth playing, then you can put in the 3-bet or the 4-bet at that point. So it's a very different kind of poker. You know up front that you're not going to see the flop for $10 ever in this game. So, I guess values go way up. Any ace is pretty good at this table. Obviously, any pair is well worth playing for a 3-bet. It's just a high variance, kind of silly sort of gamble poker. And fortunately for me, I hit a lot of flops against this guy, and he's not particularly good at folding post-flop either. So a good time was had by all, and my Easter vacation, if you will, was a profitable one, which is great. I want to let you guys know what's going on in the world of poker gossip, I guess. I don't know if this even counts as gossip. It's a little more serious than that, but a number of high-profile pros are currently accusing the 2021 Global Poker Index and Poker Go Tour Player of the Year, Ali Imsirovich, I think I said that right, maybe not, of cheating. So there is a well-viewed clip of him kind of taking a peek at another player's cards on the live stream from the recent Poker Go Tour event. So let's talk about that first, because he's also accused of other kinds of cheating. Now, I want to talk about peeking, or also called hole carding. This is something that blackjack players are all too familiar with. Occasionally, especially in the old days, you would find a dealer who wasn't so great at hiding the down card. Now, if you know the dealer's down card in a game of blackjack, you can basically play perfectly against that dealer. So hole carding is one way to get an edge in blackjack, especially if you're not particularly good at counting cards. If you happen to find a dealer who somehow gives you a peek of his hole cards, then you can beat him even if you don't know the first thing about basic strategy. But in poker, it's a little bit different. Like, generally, peeking at other players' cards is frowned upon. It's not technically considered cheating, okay? Because there's a rule that says each player is responsible for protecting his or her own hand. Now, that said, if I'm ever against an opponent who has a habit of flashing his hole cards, I will say in a relatively loud tone to that player, hey, just so you know, the way you're looking at your cards, I can see them. So you should do a better job of hiding your cards. And I'll make sure that everyone at the table knows that I caught a peek of this player's cards. Now, the reason I do that is because I want to be able to look at anyone, anytime, and at anything around my table without anyone accusing me of being shady or creepy or cheating or doing something scummy. A big part of my game is reading my opponents. Sometimes it's just watching the player on my right, whether he's going to grab his chips, looking at the player on my left, if he's playing with his cards many times, that means he's going to fold them, which might help me make a better decision. Maybe how the player decides to put the chips in the middle. Some players do it a little bit stronger if they have a weaker holding, and vice versa. Other players put in a stronger looking bet when they have a stronger holding, and so on and so forth. Basically, a huge part of my profits in live poker come from my ability to read my opponents. And a huge part of that, of course, is observing my opponents, especially when they don't know I'm looking at them. So I don't want to be accused of cheating. I think you were peeking at that guy's cards, just because I'm constantly looking around the table at all times, at everything, not to try to get a peek at my opponent's hole cards, but to get a peek at his body language and try to get a sense of how strong he is in the event that he decides to call or raise. So for that reason, I like to make a big production out of the fact that he accidentally flashed his cards to me, and I'll remind him one more time after that. And I've had players that will still show me their cards after being told twice, and at that point, I guess it's just, you know, up to me how ethical I want to be as far as looking at those cards. I mean, many times, even if you do see the cards of the player on your right, your advantage is not as big as you might otherwise think. I mean, for example, if your opponent folds a jack of diamonds and a six of clubs, that doesn't really matter to you if you have the ace five of hearts, right? I mean, I guess you know that he didn't throw away any hearts, but really, how much is that going to affect your decision or how you feel about the flop? Yeah, of course, a little bit, but not very much. And some players might actually fall into the trap of having seen the cards of the player on their right, playing too many hands, feeling like they have some big advantage because they've seen two of the discarded cards. It really gets to be unethical when your opponent doesn't fold, when you see what he has and now he's raised. Well, now if I know what you have and you've raised, I can three bet or call and pretty much play perfectly against you, much like the blackjack player who can see the hole cards of the dealer. So apparently Ali did this on the stream. He was taking a peek at this careless player's cards. And again, it's that player's responsibility to hide those cards. And it's also pretty uncool of Ali to take advantage of the fact that this guy was not doing a good job of hiding his cards. But that's not exactly cheating. Okay, let's be clear about that. It's uncool, it's scummy, but it's actually not technically cheating. But because it is scummy and something that people were talking about that day, the next day, Ali shows up with sunglasses on. And anyone who's ever watched Poker Go and has seen this guy win tournament after tournament and just have, you know, such an incredible record of playing, particularly at the highest stakes tournaments, he never wears sunglasses. So that in itself made him look a bit more guilty than he otherwise would have been. Now, this steamrolled, snowballed into other players, very well-known players, such as Alex Foxen, who started the whole conversation and then was supported by Justin Bonomo, Chance Cornuth, and others, saying that Ali is a known cheater in the high-stakes community, that he uses RTA, which is real-time assistance in his online play, that he's been banned from GG Poker, and on and on and on. Now, let me be clear at this point on the podcast. My opinions about Ali Imsirovic, or really any other player too for that matter, but particularly about Ali, are not based on any personal experience that I've had. I've never met him. I don't believe I've ever even done commentary on a tournament in which he was playing. So I am not connected to this man at all. I am merely reporting what other people are saying about him. My opinions about him are my own, and they do not necessarily reflect anyone at Tournament Poker Edge, Derek Tenbush, or anyone else at Online Gaming LLC, or Poker Stars, or America's Card Room, or any of our sponsors, or Spotify, or Stitcher, or anywhere else where you might be listening to this podcast. These are my opinions and mine alone. In my opinion, Ali Imsirovic is a scumbag. What is that based on? Well, where there's smoke, there's fire. And all of these top players wouldn't be coming out against this player just based on suspicion. I believe that someone must have firsthand knowledge of these RTAs and multi-accounting and chip dumping and everything else that this person is accused of. It is incredibly unlikely to me, in my humble opinion, that these alleged infractions are completely made up. That just seems incredibly unlikely. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And although I can't personally convict him of anything, I believe what I'm reading. So once again, I am just sharing my opinion. I do not have firsthand knowledge of this, nor do I have any proof whatsoever, but I believe those who are saying these things about Ali. Now, this has led to a larger discussion about whether or not there should be a poker blacklist. For reasons that I will never understand, players who have been banned from modern poker websites such as America's Card Room and GG Poker and others are not reported to the public. The funds are withdrawn and then distributed to the players who were cheated, but no one ever actually gets to find out the actual identity of the cheaters. Now, this is not true in any other sport. You know, when Pete Rose gambled on baseball, he was banned from the Hall of Fame and from the game itself for life. And no one said, well, I wonder who it was that was banned. We put other players, and it goes on and on. Anyone who ever cheated, used performance-enhancing drugs, Lance Armstrong, the guys from the point-shaving scandal in basketball. I mean, this is something that's been going on since the beginning of time. Cheaters get outed. But for some reason, these websites don't do that. Now, these players, the aforementioned Alex Foxens, Chance Cornes of the world, want that to stop. They want there to be a poker blacklist. What's really funny to me is that Justin Bonomo, who, by the way, is a friend of mine, and, you know, he's come to my comedy shows. I've been to parties with him. He's a great guy. But back in the day when Justin Bonomo was just a boy, he was one of the first ever online players to go down for multi-accounting on, I believe it was Party Poker back in the day, but I could be wrong about the specific website. But obviously, Justin has been a fairly noble citizen since then and is no longer associated with being a scumbag, cheater, jerk. But it's funny that he's kind of one of the ones that's banging the drum that we should really out the players who are cheating. But you guys, those who have pointed this out have to remember, in the early days of online poker, it really was the wild, wild west. And multi-accounting was fairly common. And, you know, players helping each other was also fairly common. And other forms of online cheating or collusion that we now all agree are wrong, there was a bit more gray area back then. Now, I'm not saying this to downplay the severity of Bonomo's crimes, if you will, 20 years ago. I'm just saying it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. In this day and age, all players know what's cool and what isn't, and we're not supposed to be using RTA when we play online poker. Now, if Ali is really doing all of these things, I think he should be the poster boy for the poker blacklist. I think that we should continue encouraging GG Poker and other major poker sites to release the names of players who have been banned for cheating, and then reputable organizations such as the World Poker Tour, the Poker Go Tour, and of course the World Series of Poker can make their own decisions as to whether or not they want to allow these same players to participate in their live events. And I have a feeling that if those names were made public, some of these scumbag cheaters would end up disappearing, never to be heard from again, for the betterment of poker at large. Just my opinion, once again, not necessarily the opinions of this company or this network or this podcast station. Now, before we get to this week's discussion of the 2021 main event, I have two more hands for you guys. And I'll admit it, I have WSOP fever. I've been dreaming at night about walking into the Horseshoe Casino on the Las Vegas Strip and playing the best poker of my life against hopefully some of you out there in Vegas in just a few weeks. Really, I'm getting excited. But before we get to those hands, I want to say I'm sorry to those of you whom I have promised a spot as a guest on this podcast. My schedule of late has been so erratic and so just full of different responsibilities that it's been hard for me to really schedule exactly when I'm going to do the podcast. Now, if I had a set time every week when I would, you know, set that time aside to record, then I could schedule a guest in advance and get one of you to come on, and that would be so much easier. But the way it works now is when I have a meeting that ends up getting canceled, that's when I do the podcast, when that meeting was supposed to be. So that doesn't exactly allow much time for logistics and scheduling a guest and figuring out a time that works for everybody involved. So I'm sorry for those who are waiting for me to let you cash in on your, you know, be a guest later tokens. I haven't forgotten any of you, and you know who you are. I promise that we will get you on soon. At the very latest, we can do it in person if you guys are planning on being in Vegas, where I will be doing plenty of podcasting from the World Series of Poker, not at the Rio. All right, so let's talk about last year's main event, the last one at the Rio. We're going to continue day two, the second day two, day two C, D, F, or whatever the heck it was. We're going to be at Barry Greenstein's table. There's also Mr. Eric E. Dog Lindgren making an appearance. So this was kind of like watching poker 20 years ago. You had the Robin Hood of poker and E. Dog right there next to each other, two of the original famous poker players from the television boom of the early 2000s. So the blinds are 800 and 1600 with the 1600 big blind ante. So there's 4,000 in the pot to get things started. And one fold to Eric Lindgren. He's in second position, holding five of spades, four of spades. So 5-4 suited. And he's got about 120,000 in his stack. So Eric's sitting here. His M is 30. He's got 75 big blinds, but he's in early position. To me, this is usually going to be a fold. The only time I would open this pot from this position with this hand would be if I really felt like my skill edge over all of my opponents, or at least almost all of my opponents, was fairly substantial. I don't know most of the players at Eric's table, but on his immediate right, who's already folded, was Tim Burt, who's probably the strongest player at the table. So perhaps Eric just wants to get involved in a pot that Tim won't make his life hard. But look, we still got Greenstein on the left, Igor Ioffe, two to his left. I mean, there are some good players at this table, so I think that E-Dog is best served just throwing away the 5-4 suited. I mean, I could open here with like a 9-8 suited or a 8-7 suited, but those hands are significantly stronger than 5-4 suited because they, when they make top pair, it tends to be good a lot more often, obviously, than a pair of fours or a pair of fives would be. So for that reason, I think this should be a fold, but E-Dog decides to open. He makes it 3,800, again at 800, 1,600. He raises to 3,800 and it folds all the way around to the big blind, Juan Mora, who only starts with 72,000 in his stack. So his M is 18. He's got 45 big blinds. And Juan, three bets from the big blind to 12,200. So a substantial three bet here. And now it's back on Lindgren in position with 5-4 suited. And I think he has to call, which is why I don't like opening this hand in the first place. He's going to be in position. He's got a strong suited connector. Well, okay, not that strong, but he's in position with a suited connector, a hand with a lot of possibilities against what is almost definitely going to be a strong three betting range. So he needs to call because he's got a hand to break a man with. And because of that, I think we need to just call the three bet and hope to flop something really strong. You could fold here, but if you're going to fold to this three bet, I think you should have just folded in the first place rather than opening at all. E-Dog agrees with me, puts in the call, 12,200 total, and we're going to see a flop with 27,000 in the middle. And now Mora only has 60,000 behind, so his SPR is a little more than two. The flop comes ace of diamonds, six of clubs, five of clubs. Now, I have not yet revealed Mora's hand, but he bets 13,000 as a continuation bet into the 27,000 pot. So starting things off with a little less than half the pot. And E-Dog now has bottom pair with several possibilities as far as picking up straight draws and things like that on the turn. But unfortunately for Eric, no spade on this flop. So let's see what we should do. I think it's best to just call here. I mean, we can maybe take the pot away just because the player puts in a continuation bet and because he three bet before the flop, it doesn't mean that he necessarily has ace king or ace queen or pocket aces. So for that reason, I think we should call this bet. We've got bottom pair and several other possibilities, and let's see what develops. So E-Dog agrees with me and calls the 13,000. Now at this point, there's 53,000 in the middle, and Mora only has 47,000 behind, so less than half the pot. And the turn comes the seven of clubs, completing the flush, but we don't have that flush, and also giving us the bottom end of an open-ended straight draw, 4-5-6-7. So a board is now ace of diamonds, six of clubs, five of clubs, seven of clubs, and now Mora checks. So in E-Dog's shoes, what would you make of that check? Well, one problem is we don't block flushes, so it's entirely possible that our opponent has made a flush and is now checking it. But other than that, I don't think that he will be checking a strong hand very often. I mean, think about it. The way he three bet pre-flop, setting up the SPR of a little more than two, I think if you have an ace king or ace queen or any other very strong hand, a set of aces, you're probably going to try to get all in by betting three times. He bet half the pot on the turn, on the flop, and now if he bets even like a third of the pot on the turn, it should be relatively easy to get all in on the river. Now, if he has a pair of aces and no club, he has to be concerned that E-Dog could have picked up a flush draw with that third club on the turn. So for all of these reasons, in Eric Lindgren's shoes, I would assume Juan Mora probably doesn't have an ace. So therefore, I would probably just go ahead and take this pot away, put him all in, bet enough to put him all in, and expect him to fold. Now, the reason I would bet so big is because it's going to be hard for him to call if he has a hand like ace 10 or ace jack that he kind of did a light three bet with before the flop. Now, I don't know how often this player would actually have made such a three bet with such a relatively weak hand. I mean, E-Dog did open from early position, so I don't expect to see ace 10, ace jack very often. But what if we can get him to fold ace queen if he doesn't have a club and just assume that we made a flush or a straight? I don't want him hero calling with a hand like pocket kings or pocket queens. So that's why I would put maximum pressure on and make that full bet. Also, if he does happen to call with a hand like ace-king or ace-ace, we still have outs because we have that open ender. So we don't want that call to happen, but it's very unlikely that our opponent has us drawing dead. The only hand that really has us drawing dead would be a flush, maybe a hand like ace-king of clubs. But I'm not even sure that hand would bet nothing and check to us on the turn. So for all those reasons, I would just move all in. E-Dog does something a little bit different here. He bets only 24,000, which is just about half of Mora's stack. And Mora looks disgusted and folds two red kings. So I really like this sizing. I'm not sure that I would have thought of it on the turn. I think that E-Dog is playing with fire a little bit here. I mean, if the opponent has pocket kings with the king of clubs, he may actually call this bet. He's getting about 3-1 on a call, and he probably needs about that in order to call, assuming that all of his club outs are live, as well as his two remaining set outs, which won't always be live. But yeah, it's pretty close between calling and folding when we have the king of clubs in our hand. So I don't know. I feel like this bet plays with fire a little bit. I would rather just move all in. What is E-Dog supposed to do if he gets check raised? He's going to be getting a ridiculous price to draw to this straight, but he won't know whether the check raise was made with a flush that had him drawing dead or not. And it just kind of puts you through the ringer in that spot, especially because at that point the pot would be very much inflated and probably worth calling. I try to stay out of those situations, and I would love to know from E-Dog what his plan was if Mora had check-raised all in. Nevertheless, that didn't happen, and E-Dog wins a nice pot with a pretty sweet semi-bluff in the main event. All right, let's do one more hand from that same level and that same table. Igor Iafi in second position opens to 3,500 with ace-10 suited, the ace of spades and 10 of spades, and he's got 212,000 behind. So he's doing great in this tournament. I mean, the average stack at this point is probably right around 100,000 or so. So he's loving life. Dylan Nguyen in the hijack calls with 240,000 behind. I'm not going to reveal his hand yet. And Juan Mora from the last hand calls again on the button. Now he's only got 43,000 at this point. So his M is 11 and he's got about 28 big blinds. So three of us are going to see the flop, and it's 14,500 in the middle. And the flop comes ace of clubs, ace of diamonds, deuce of spades. So hero in this hand, Igor Iafi, has flopped three of a kind with a 10 kicker. And he c-bets 4,000 into 14,500. Now, I'm not a fan of this sizing here. I think that you're going to get curious calls from hands like pocket eights, pocket nines, pocket sevens, and so on, whether you bet 4,000, 6,000, 8,000, or 10,000. So this might be the only street where we're able to make any money in this pot. So I would bet like 9,500 and see if either of these guys wants to call me. So I'm not too worried about being beat, at least not yet. I'm happy I've got three of a kind. I probably have the best kicker. Many players would three bet with hands like ace-jack, ace-queen, ace-king. So I'm really only worried about being behind a flopped set, a flopped full house when I flop three of a kind. So yeah, I mean, you can't worry about everything in poker. Let's get some money while we still can. I would put in about 9,500 into the 14,500 pot, especially with two opponents. But he bets only 4,000 and then Nguyen folds. And Mora, again, the same player from the last hand with the pocket kings, in this hand, I have not revealed what he has, and he just calls. So now the pot is 22,500, and Mora has about 39,000 behind, and the turn comes the nine of hearts for a board of ace of clubs, ace of diamonds, deuce of spades, nine of hearts. So Badoogie, and we still have three of a kind with a 10 kicker, and Igor Iafi checks. I don't know why. I mean, I think that we should be trying to get three streets of value here against worse ace X, right? Many players will call you, especially having overcalled. I don't think that he's got us outkicked a lot. Maybe ace jack, but I don't think that too many players with that kind of stack size, he only starts again with 28 big blinds, M of 11. I don't think too many players would just flat call with ace queen or ace king, maybe with ace jack suited or ace jack off suit, but probably not. I think that usually we're looking to three bet and get that SPR down, particularly when there's a call in between. So I would be surprised if Mora ever turns over a hand as strong as ace queen. Although we've seen, especially in the main event, players do things in a, let's say, unorthodox way, right? So you can't rule anything out in the main event. But I'm not really sure why Ioffe checked here. But when he does, Mora decides to bet 8,300 into the 22,500 pot. So a little more than one third here. And I don't think we can fold, right? We've got three aces. So Ioffe calls. Perhaps he checked because he thinks that Mora, who's on a short stack, remember he starts the hand with 43,000. Perhaps Igor thinks that Juan Mora is getting a bit impatient or maybe a little desperate and might make some hopeless bluffs in spots like this one. So whatever the reason, he checks and then he gets the bet that he probably wanted and calls. Now with 39,100 in the middle, Juan Mora has only 31,000 behind. So this is two hands in a row that we discussed where this player has less than a pot-sized bet remaining. And now in this hand, the river is the eight of clubs for a final board of ace of clubs, ace of diamonds, deuce of spades, nine of hearts, eight of clubs, hero holding the ace of spades, ten of spades. And once again, Igor Ioffe checks. And this time Juan Mora, who has, remember, less than a pot-sized bet remaining, puts in just 12,000 into the 39,000 pot. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm sitting there in Igor Ioffe's shoes, I'm hating this. I feel like an all-in shove is probably much more likely to be a bluff than this little bet. I mean, what does he think I'm going to fold? It just feels like it's value so much, maybe close to 100% of the time, would a short stack put in such a small bet. It feels awfully milky to me, but I think that in Ioffe's shoes, you have to start thinking about, would this player ever make this play as a bluff? I think the answer is actually no. Well, maybe not ever, but very, very, very rarely will this end up being a bluff. So it really becomes, could he be doing this with the same hand or a worse hand than what I have? Would he have flat called on the button with a hand like ace five? Especially ace five suited, and now think that he's trying to get value when in fact he is outkicked. I don't know. I really don't know. But because this bet is so small, there's now 51,000 in the middle, and it only cost me 12,000 to call. I'm getting more than 4-1 on a call. I just need to be good at a little less than 20% of the time. I think it's a horrible spot. I don't see any reason to check raise, because I'm starting to feel like I'm beat a lot. So I would just call in this situation. And Igor Ioffe just calls, and calls rather quickly, and loses to pocket deuces. So one of the nightmare hands actually shows up. And we need to talk about this call pre-flop. So again, put yourself this time in Juan Mora's shoes now that we know what he had. You're sitting there with 45,000 chips to start. So your M is 11. You have 28 big blinds, and there's a raise from second position followed by a call from the hijack, and you just have pocket deuces. You guys might think this is a bit conservative of me, but I don't really like calling with this hand with this kind of stack. I think when my M is 11, I try not to play small pairs and suited connectors, because I just don't have enough implied odds for if I do happen to flop a miracle, as Mora does in this hand. And as we saw, he ends up not getting maximum value for his hand anyway. I think especially in the main event where you've got 2 hour levels, you don't have to force the action, but making these little calls pre-flop, you know, call a raise here, call a raise there, the next thing you know, you're out of chips. So I would just be patient and wait for a real hand to play. And to me, pocket deuces does not qualify. Now, if my M is 15 or more, I might want to change my thinking about this and go ahead and set mine, especially because it is basically a min raise to 3,500. Certainly not a huge mistake, but also not a play that I wouldn't have made. So what we see now is a bet on the flop. And I think that on the flop in Morris shoes, you just want to call. You flopped basically the nuts. I mean, you can't beat four aces or ace deuce, but you can beat everything else. So you may as well just go ahead and call. And so I like the way he plays the flop, just calling, although he was probably really wishing that c-bet had been a little bigger, or at least that it had been called by Mr. Wynn, who, by the way, only had a jack of spades, seven of spades, so not really sure what he was doing in the pot to begin with. I think sometimes when players get a big stack early, remember Wynn had 240,000 when the average was about 100,000. So I think sometimes when that happens, players get a little bit what we call chip drunk and just feel like they can play virtually any two cards, any two suited, even a suited three gapper like Jack 7 from the hijack. I mean, obviously that's a fold or maybe occasionally a three bet, but it's never a call. So he ends up losing an extra 3,500. He really didn't need to lose in that pot. But interestingly, notice that if the flush had come, Wynn may have lost a huge pot and possibly even doubled up Igor Iafi in a flush versus flush situation, which are so hard to get away from in two-card poker. So, yeah, getting back to Mora, I like just calling on the flop. On the turn, he bets only 8,300 into 22.5. Now, guys, when you're thinking about making a value bet, you also have to think about what kind of hands can call you. I mean, if Iafi has nothing, he can't call any bet, right? If he has a hand like pocket tens, he might call one bet, but not two. If he has an ace, he's probably not folding no matter what we bet. And what I would be thinking about if I flop the nuts like this with my short stack is how can I optimistically get this double up, LFG? So I think what you want to do is bet a little bit bigger. Turn bets generally should be larger than flop bets as a percentage of the pot, as a very, very general rule with tons and tons of exceptions. But I don't think that I would ever want to bet 8,300 on the turn, regardless of what I had. I mean, he's basically representing, when he's bluffing, he's representing an ace or better. So you want to make a more polarized bet in this situation. I would bet at least 15,000, which would make it trivially easy to get the rest of the stack in on the river if I happen to get called. Also note that if my opponent calls on the turn, I can pretty much always put him on an ace. And I should be loving the fact that my opponent has three of a kind, because it's super hard for anyone to fold an ace on a board of ace, ace, deuce, nine, badoogie. So I really think this is a sizing mistake here and one that costs Mr. Mora the double up. But then he makes another sizing mistake on the river, having left so much chicken on the bone, a really clean eight of clubs on the end. And he just bets 12,000 into 39,000 when he only had 31,000 behind. So he basically left an extra 19,000 on the table that he should have won. So I don't mean to pick on Juan Mora, if you're listening, or if you're friends with him. I didn't mean to select two hands that I thought that he didn't play very well, but it just worked out that way as I'm reviewing the footage of the 2021 World Series of Poker main event, which I do every year in the months leading up to the next year's main event. There are literally hours and hours of coverage for us to review it with a very affordable PokerGo subscription. So I always do that. It helps me get in the mood to go and play some poker. Plus, I love listening to the excellent commentary from Nick Schulman. So that'll do it for this episode. I'm looking forward to the WSOP, and I know many of you are as well. If you're interested in joining my favorite poker training website, TournamentPokerEdge.com, now is the time to do it, where you can get $10 off your first month's membership just by entering the code PODCAST at checkout. So for everyone here at TPE, I'm Clayton Fletcher. Thank you so much for listening.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. Luck and intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. It's not rough, it isn't fun. Oh, whoa, whoa.